Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, hello and welcome to Food for Thought, a podcast gabfest. We're in a multiracial mix of queer writers gather around the table to talk about sex, identity, culture, what we like to read, and who we like to read. Food for Thought, the only show where cup of joe doesn't mean coffee, it means cum.
Oh, no.
Accurate.
Oh, my.
We might be the only show, but we're not the only thoughts.
I feel like Kenya is already just good. The looks on Kenya's face so far have just been like, I do not agree. I did not consent to be here in this nonsense.
I agree. Am I shocked? Yes. Am I stunned? Absolutely yes. But I'm happy to be here. I'm very happy to be here.
I would like to report, namely for my boyfriend, who is an aficionado of bucket hats for no reason because they're horrible. Kenya is wearing a bucket hat.
I love bucket hats. They're just like bucket hats, you know?
They actually are. I will agree with Kenya. Yeah. They actually are bucket hats.
I love a bucket hat.
It's giving like 2002, the end of the 90s. You know
right,
what I mean?
That's where I'm trying to be. That's where I'm trying to mentally stay because I can't with right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Remember when we were just like, oh, global warming is probably going to suck at some time.
Yeah, probably.
Right.
Back then, you know.
Yeah. Right, where we only had like one stolen election to worry about.
Only one.
Not like every stolen election.
It hadn't become a pattern just yet at that time. No.
We had just one pandemic. Remember when there was just one pandemic?
Yeah, oh, I don't even remember that one.
I remember being like, H1N1, this is funny.
Right.
That's a throwback. H1N1, bitch. Yes,
I was like, Zika throwback. Virus. Ain't nobody worried about no Zika virus up in here.
Listen.
Not Zika. That's a deep cut. The Zika virus is a deep cut. We appreciate that from you.
So, I am Tommy Teebs Pico, Indigenous American poet, screenwriter, TV writer, and I'm sorry if I'm a little rough today, but I stayed up until 4 in the morning watching the new Stranger Things, and I love that. That show is so gay to me.
That is amazing.
In what way is it gay?
Well, one of them is obsessed with his friend, and like, it is mad that his friend has a girlfriend. Mm. Then also, like, 11 is giving me a hard femme vibes. Like, I remember when I first saw Stranger Things, I was at a bar in Portland in 2016, and the sound was off, and I saw her in a dress, and I thought it was a boy in a dress, and I was like, look at this progressive ass show. It turned out that 11 was a girl. But I mean, my first imprint of that show was it being very gay.
Show's been around for that long.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow.
I'm Joseph Osmondson, scientist, nonfiction writer. And between my book launching in less than a week and monkeypox being a thing, and COVID still being a really bad thing, and the semester of hell just ending, I'm so tired.
I'm tired just listening to you.
Yeah, I'm a husk. I'm an empty husk of a human.
You are a wan little husk.
I'm so sorry about that. I hope you get some sleep soon. Sleep is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, what? Sorry. What were you? I was snapping. Sorry. I'm back.
I don't know. I'm Den Michelle Norris, and I'm a reader, a writer, a former figure skater. And even though I don't always believe in allowing white people time to rest, in Ho's case, I'm just going to say, baby, you need to learn how to say no.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kenya Denise. I am the co-founder and owner of Domino Sound. I'm a writer, a psychedelic researcher. And I bought this joint at the bodega And I don't think it was weed. But I don't know what it was. Like, it said THC on it, but I've smoked a lot of weed in my life, and I swear it's not real. And I keep seeing all these things about THC derivatives, and I just want to know, like, where is the real weed at in New York City?
Right. Did you try to sprinkle it on pizza? Because it could have been oregano.
Listen.
They fit people out sometimes.
There's supposed to be a dispensary in Williamsburg that people like. Like a legit dispensary.
Who wants to go to Williamsburg? You should
take that, take a little bit of that, go get another joint, and send it to Berkeley for testing.
I might have to, because the thing is, I liked it, but I was like, this is not weed.
So what, like, did it get you, like, high adjacent?
Kind of adjacent, but like in a way that it was not weed, you know, and it wasn't CBD either, because like I like to smoke CBD too, but it wasn't that. So I feel like there's some weird mutant stuff going on, and I'm interested to learn more.
I started doing these pre-rolls called Dadgrass, because they advertise it as having a glass of wine instead of the whole bottle, which is like kind of...
Oh, that's so good!
Like, so it's like, it's like very a mild high, and it's just what I need. Like, when the sun goes down and I'm about to watch Stranger Things and I'm strapped in for this ride, and I don't want to be like so high that I can't stop putting on chapstick. You know what I mean? But like,
right. Oh my God, that's a good high.
That is on the scale of
that
high.
That is a good high.
That's a good high.
That is not a good high, Kenya. That is a rough space to be in.
Right.
Like,
no,
I've been doing this for 20 minutes.
No, you can get too high. And I think it's really cute that there's like brands that target to like parents. So have you heard of Dosist? It's like the vape that when you take an inhale, it vibrates and lets you know that your hit's done. And so it's really good for parents. And we got one for Donald, and he was so excited, Alex's dad. And it just went around the circle, and it was completely gone by the time that he was like ready to use it, because the kids just said, fuck the vibration, just give me more hits.
Keep going.
You know?
Just give it,
but it is
2022,
right? It's 2022,
right? Yeah. What's a hit?
Who needs what is a hit?
We all need infinite hits,
right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
But
we need to get knocked out, not just a hit. We need,
right.
Like, we need to be put out of our misery for a period of time.
I think I got the menu for y'all. You ready?
Yeah.
Yes.
Boom. Be ready.
First off, we give some... Actually, I'm so excited for this Penny for Your Thoughts, because I think it's going to be a little spicy. We give some spicy advice in Penny for Your Thoughts. The whole show today is meant to be about levity, comedy, how in such dark times we can make one another laugh, and how important that is to sort of our ongoing survival. And we end, as always, with one little bite. But the only question is, what hole is that bite going inside of?
Ooh.
My donut hole, duh.
Take it away.
I think it's... buck, 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 be guck. I'm feeling a little bit peckish. I think it's time we start the top of the show the way any good top should, with a little tease, our uproarious appetizer segment of Muse Bouche. Den, I think you have something to say.
Cha-ching, get out your coin purses, benches. It's time for Penny for Your Thoughts.
That's right.
Oh, sheesh. She remembered her line.
Yes, Den. Remembering is the new doing. So...
No, really, though. It is.
I didn't mean for that to come out, but it hurt. It hurt. Yes, our advice segment where you should absolutely not take our advice. Who's got the question?
I do. This one actually comes from a Twitter mention, not even a DM. But it was specifically tweeted that this should be a call-in question for Food for Thought Pod. So here's the question. So a girl who used to sling homophobic phrases to me in junior high school is on Tinder cruising for women because she's, quote, always been curious. And don't worry, her, quote, husband knows she's on here. Do I match or do I not match? Swipe right, swipe left. The homophobic teen who used to torture you.
Oh my God.
Getting it in.
Oh my God.
Wow.
I think right all the way. I have to say. Because like, not because I want to, just because I would like to see if we're matched so that then I could tell you, why were you such a fucking bitch to me when we were in middle school or whatever?
Wow.
I mean,
just getting it, using it to be in the same room as the person so you could do a full-on confrontation.
Vengeance is a tempting lover. In my humble opinion, there's a lot of factors to be considered here. But here are the two main reasons why I might consider swiping right on this person. One, simply to troll them for payback. Give them a little pain. And two, if there's someone that you like were attracted to or had a big crush on, swipe right and fuck the shit out of them so that by the time you're done with them and they've been rode hard and put away dripping wet, it is very clear to them that they are unequivocally a fagot. In whatever context that means.
Dan, so you're literally saying sex as conversion therapy, but conversion from straight to gay.
100%. 100%.
Wow.
And then leave them wanting more, knowing that they'll never get it as good again. So those are two reasons why you would swipe right.
What would you do, Kenya?
You guys are very radical. Thank you for those opinions. I think.
Thank you for those opinions.
I think, first of all, I think most homophobic kids in high school, as I remember, are fucking gay now.
Yeah, dude.
It's like the most common thing for a homophobe bully to be gay in adult life. Like, it's just a thing. So, I mean, I don't know if I would be like, swiping right, trying to be cute. I think I would more message them. I don't know. Can you message them on this thing?
You have to swipe right to message.
Okay, so then I would swipe right just to message. And I would say something super cryptic like, I see you though.
Oh my God!
And just never respond ever again.
Oh my
God. I love that one. I love that. I love that spicy take.
Kenya Denise is an evil genius.
Y'all are wild. I have to say, so this has not happened to me, but a while ago, I had a DM in my Facebook from a person who I remembered vaguely. There was so much homophobia spewed at me when I was young that like this person doesn't even particularly stand out as doing it. But they came to like apologize, and I will write them back eventually, but I've been so blocked about it because it just like unlocks a place in me that I kind of like, I don't know that I could fuck my way through. I don't know that I can forgive my way through. It's just like, I actually do the therapy thing where I'm just like, how can I care for the trauma that was done to little baby Joe at that time? You know what I mean? I kind of need to put distance between myself and the people who were directly harming me sort of relentlessly day in and day out to the point where I just always felt I was on the brink of violence. I don't think a swipe right would help me in this particular situation.
Yeah, I feel like you would catch a case. Yeah.
You
like that's what it's sounding 100%. Like it's sounding like you would catch a case.
Yeah.
So
I would be topping them and like pushing their head into the pillow, but then I would just like lose all sensibility and like fully crack their neck, you know, and they would die there.
I see that.
There, you know?
I see that.
I don't think I trust myself to be a good version. I don't know. Dying during sex might be good sex. I don't know. I'm not putting myself in this particular set of circumstances. I don't think. I have a question though for the group since we're talking about this. Were there ever moments in your youth that you were like picking on someone for being like a faggot? Because I feel like that, you know, it's such a common defense. Everyone is like, we were too gay.
No.
Well, I think also, because like, I know you guys are only like 4 years older than me, but I feel like 4 years now with the internet, it's like, it's a gap. And I really do feel like I came up right at the time where everyone was like super bisexual. Like, I feel like we definitely said things that like probably like we would always be like, you're so gay, that's so gay, but we were all gay, so it was kind of like I wouldn't say it now, but like we were just so crude about it. But I think I just kind of grew up in that kind of city environment, which I'm really grateful for. And no, I didn't bully. I wasn't really a bully.
I tried for 1 week in sixth grade. 1 week in sixth grade, week. I tried.
Oh,
and it did
Joe.
Bad things to my conscience, and it couldn't continue.
It's hard to be a bully when you have things. Such a punchable face.
Yeah, a very punchable face. It did some bad things to my conscience. But the thing is, it doesn't make you feel any better, nor does it like make you not bullied, really. It's like not it's not a good practical outcome for the set of circumstances that you're actually living through.
I didn't bully people always... for being gay. I bullied people for being dumb.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's fully teams.
You are kind of a bully. You have a bullying mouth.
I have a bullying mouth. I just like putting bitches in their place. That's all.
I mean,
and bitches need to be put in their place. They
exactly.
do.
As
I went
should.
To schools where the Socratic method was really popular, so I didn't bully people for being gay, and I didn't ever consider myself a bully. I was very loved as a child, and so I did not feel the need to make I didn't have to make other people feel bad in order to feel good. I felt good automatically because I'm me, and why wouldn't I?
Period.
But in classes, I would drag people when they said dumb shit in class. I wouldn't just be like, you're a dumb bitch, but I would break down why what they said was dumb. And I never thought of that as bullying because, again, I was often taught in the Socratic method, but in fact, it might have been because.
Right.
It wasn't just in the spirit of intellectual debate or rigor. Like, I was being a little bitch.
And to clarify, I didn't actually bully anyone. I would just say, like, well, Hooked on Phonics didn't work for you, did it? Like, because it had to be funny.
Wait,
that's the thing.
Okay.
It couldn't just be mean. It had to be funny. That's how I grew up.
Okay, so, but the thing is, did Hooked on Phonics work for anyone?
Wow. I think it works about as well as Dare to keep people off drugs.
Well, let me be the face of how Dare did not work. 100,000% does not work. It motivated me more, in fact.
I really hope this person gets back in touch with us and lets us know in which direction they swiped.
Yes.
And which of these possibilities they came up with. Teebs is bullying the person once you get them alone in a room. Den's fucking them gay. or my absolute inability to get over trauma.
Check. That clears.
Yeah.
The check cleared
out. Denise is evil genius.
All right, well... I hope you got something out of that answer. I think it's time we get to the meat of our discussion, the thought process, spelled T-H-O-T.
T-H-O-T.
And to sling our meat this week, it's me. So,
yay!
I was in the inbox of all these thoughties because the world seems so dark right now. And... so many things that have been happening have made me feel absolutely sick to my stomach. And we're not even in a Republican fucking regime right now.
Right.
Or are we?
Or are we? So I thought maybe we'd get add the levity to this conversation and just talk generally about comedy because it's something that I've always used to get over. It's something that I've always used, sometimes as a defense mechanism, but also as a coping mechanism. And I think I love in the same vein that I love people's voices. I love people's sense of humor. And I'm always so curious about how they developed their sense of humor. Well, those of us who have us. I mean, that's what
talks about sense of humor. Basically excluding me. Yeah, I am not involved in this conversation whatsoever.
So my first question is going back in time to your formative years, what do you think informed your sense of humor? Was it a television show? Was it a comedian? Was it a confluence of things? Was it your family? Like, because, well, like I said before in the Penny, on the res, you could get away with an insult, but it had to be funny. Like, it couldn't be cruel. It had to be funny. And I feel like so much of my sense of humor was given to me by my cousins. It was given to me by not my parents. They're not really that. My parents aren't funny. But my cousins are. My cousins were hilarious. The way that they would roast each other. And then, but it encouraged me to be quick on my feet. It encouraged me to come back stronger. And also, it taught me how to take a joke. when it mm-hmm. was when it was a joke. But the other right. thing I think that was instrumental in setting my sense of humor, I mean, it was like the sitcoms of, it was 90s sitcoms, but specifically, I mm-hmm. think of The Simpsons. That is something yes. that I watched on end all the time. And Living Single. Those were like, I think, yes. my two.
Iconic. I think I had a similar experience to you. Well, at least part of my humor. I don't know. I kind of just was born thinking everything was funny, but also black people are just hella funny. And like with half my family being from New Orleans and half from DC, I mean, I was just like around the funniest motherfuckers of all time. Like, they could just really curse someone out in the most beautiful, hilarious way. So I really grew up like appreciating that and loving that. So yeah, my cousins, but also my aunts and uncles. So I think that's where the beginning of my comedy, like it was just kind of natural, like how black people are, and especially we're really good at using laughter and comedy to deal with like really intense trauma. So I've definitely seen that. But I would say like when I got a little bit older, like in my teenage years, I really, really appreciated Cat Williams. As a
oh
comic.
My god, yes,
like the early Cat Williams, I was just like absolutely addicted to it. I also really liked Key and Peele. I like really liked fuckboy comedy when I was just the, you know, like yeah, a young yeah. stoner, like, and I just love that shit. I like physical comedy, like I like Charlie Chaplin. And yeah, I definitely love like sitcoms. I feel like when I was growing up, it was very much like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air type stuff. Like that was like the funniest show of all time to me. Like I just love that show so much. And like Martin.
Oh my god, Martin.
Oh my god, terrific.
Martin, because Martin is... and Living Single were on the same night. It was like right. the best night. Yes. It was Thursday night. It was the best night of the week.
Yeah, I mean, fuck NBC, fuck Friends.
Curious, Ken, have you watched the Fresh Prince reboot?
No, I'm kind of one of those people, when I love the original so much, I'm like, I'm not even really trying to see it, the new one. Like, but I would try it, but I haven't seen it.
Because it's not a comedy.
Yeah, it's like a yeah. drama. I mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, okay, I could definitely see that story as a drama. But I don't know. I loved the comedy of it, but I do think it only could exist in the time that it did exist. Like, I think right now, it couldn't be the same show.
What about you, Den?
First of all, I didn't know that that show had even been rebooted. So, shocking no.
We have literally talked
Queen
about
of pop
it
culture.
On this show before. On this show, teams have talked about it before.
Have we?
I forgot that. I feel like my sense of humor, definitely my family is the most formative basis. But with the caveat that, like, my family was a little bit different in that, I don't know if it had to do with because they were so religious or what, there are certain aspects of sort of like standard things in sort of black families and black humor that I feel like my family didn't really engage in. So like there was no real roasting of people in my like circle going around. What my family did that was so great though was just very performative, very theatrical, and lots of storytelling. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, and so... Like, my sisters are 17 and 15 years older than me. And so, like, my favorite thing as a little kid, and my parents would do this, especially when we were in the car driving to see family, was for them to tell me really hilarious, funny stories about my sisters from when they were kids. Like, before, way before I was born, just hearing them be crazy. And so... So much of my sense of humor is less around quick comebacks and jokes. Not that I can't do that sometimes, but it's really around storytelling and inhabiting characters and inhabiting voices and things like that. And so that's the foundation for sure. But in terms of sitcoms, like my family, I mean, Martin is legendary mm-hmm. in my family. Shanaynay was formative for me.
Hello.
We like Shanaynay was important. And so all of the movies that sort of were in that tradition as well. Living Single was also really, really formative for me at an early age. But again, I grew up in this family context where there was so much of general pop culture that I was restricted from consuming and that I didn't start to consume until I was in high school and college. But once I did, I got really into it. So, like, I really, really love stand-up. And I fell in love with Wanda Sykes around that time and her stand-up specials. I loved Kathy Griffin, who, again, her stand-up at that time was really oriented around storytelling. And I will also say the sitcom Girlfriends, which I've just been recently binging again on Netflix. Y'all will hear me talk about Girlfriends all the time, but that show is fucking funny. Tracee Ellis Ross is a comedic genius. And I mean, people do know it because of Black-ish, but like long before that, she was a comedic genius, as well as all of those women were. And so that show really invited for me, like, a space to sort of center femininity and Black femininity in comedy. And that was something that I wasn't seeing a whole lot of in other areas. Living Single had some of that as well. But in terms of me being old enough to sort of begin to understand and conceptualize and appreciate that, Girlfriends was really pivotal for me as well. So there's all these different like things that sort of inform that.
Wow.
What about you, Ho?
I have such a different childhood than so many folks on this call. I had a very atomic family, nuclear family, white upbringing. I did not grow up around my cousins. I saw my extended family once a year, fully like mom, dad, sister, me, household. And so it's so different.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Sort of culture. And then, like, grew up in a town where, like, I didn't have a ton of friends. Just straight up, like, when I was younger, didn't have a ton of friends. So I feel like my approach, and I also don't, like, I don't find myself that funny. I love comedy and I love laughing and I love laughing with my friends. But it's something I've really had to like in my work, on this show and in my writing, I've had to develop like a craft of like how to make a joke, how you set up a punchline, how you are funny. And this, honestly, the show has been so great. I'm so grateful for the experience of this show, the ability to like clown one another. Like I do that with my friends now too, but to do it in a way where I like can actually do it on a podcast that I'm not like horrifically embarrassed to send out into the world for people to listen to. And just in general, being a little bit more loose and performative than my like academic training and my like atomic, nuclear, horrible family whiteness background has allowed for me has just been, you know, queerness is really the way out, you know, queerness like really allows like different types of structures and more of an extended family structure when you didn't grow up with that. Like my queer family has like people are funny in such different ways. People are from all over the country and all over the world and bring their own sort of senses of humor. And we have our own like inside jokes are so funny, you know, when you can like make a crack that like recalls something that happened like 5 years ago that everyone in the room was at and it was so funny. So it's been like definitely a journey and like letting go of my self-seriousness a little bit to be able to actually like make jokes. And definitely, you know, my humor, I'm actually, it's funny you brought this up, Teams, because I am doing the whitest thing in the world where I've started rewatching Seinfeld from the beginning. I do this every once in a while. I love Seinfeld. I think it's so funny. I think the writing is so smart. Like there's always an A plot and a B plot, which is such a sitcom trope, but the A plot and B plot usually come together in Seinfeld in a way that like at that time in sitcom writing, that didn't happen so much where it's sort of like a unified story, but you don't kind of see that to the end. And I find that like hilarious. Sort of there's a lot of dramatic irony. Because the viewer is like piecing things together. There's a lot of physical comedy as well in that show. I just like still to this day, I find it so fucking funny. And Elaine is it's like she is subtly, the acting is so good. And she is so funny. And so like that, I just like watch Elaine and I'm like, how can I like be like crack a joke like she does?
I'm curious because I think a lot of people in the pandemic, especially during, you know, season one of the pandemic where, you know, people was just staying inside all the time. I think a lot of people were revisiting comedies like The Office and Scrubs and you know,
totally.
Martin, all that kind of stuff. Is there anything that you have reengaged with that its humor has not aged well?
I mean, I think everything that I've reengaged with hasn't aged well, and it kind of can't. Like, my favorite Cat Williams stand-up, I just watched two nights ago with Alex, The Pimp Chronicles Part 1. And it's so good, and it was almost non-toxic. Like, it was
almost.
Like, there, it was like, it didn't come right out and do it, but it was just like, wow. But even that, which I think was literally so well done, and considering that was 20 years ago and the topics that were covered, but barely anything ages well. And speaking of girlfriends, that is one of my favorite shows of all time. We revisited at the beginning of the pandemic, revisiting it again now. I'm obsessed, the fashion, the comedy. But something I have really noticed is like the fat phobia. And I did not notice this when I was young. The fat phobia on every show that I used to watch, like the way they make so many jokes about just like being a little chubby, needing to get skinnier, like needing to lose weight, dieting. Like it is something that was just like so normalized, and I didn't like pick up on that. I mean, I'm sure I absorbed it as a young girl, but I didn't like pick up on it. Whereas now I'm like, wow, that was fat phobic. Like sometimes they say something and I'm like, damn, I can't believe they said that. Mm-hmm. But it was like 2004 and people were saying that. So, and even though I find it like not super harmful, like, I mean, it is harmful, but it's not like the worst example. But yeah, even things like that really just stick out to me and show how much we've somewhat progressed as a society.
But well, I mean, that was the punchline. It's not an interesting punchline anymore.
Like, right.
The punchline is you're fat, and it's like,
right.
So the fuck what?
Right.
Yeah.
Big fat is beautiful.
It's,
like,
right.
It's like it's totally in Seinfeld as well, right? Like 80% of the George jokes are either fat or bald. Like that's
right.
It. That's like the entirety of the joke is like you are fat or you are bald. And then all of the insecurities around like how he's treated by women for those reasons.
And there was like also a thing like in Friends and in The New Girl, like being fat in the past largely figured into the plot. And it was like, now I'm not and I'm so much better. And like, just, and also at this time, you know, you'd go to a supermarket checkout line and every magazine was like, who's gained weight? Who's too skinny? You know?
Yo.
Mm-hmm.
It was not right.
So I was, first of all, really quickly about girlfriends. I was thinking about that just this weekend because William is awful about weight. And then William is told by a psychic to date Jill Scott, who's playing this character Donna. And, you know, she's a full-figured woman, and he's all like, oh, she's cute, she's so beautiful. And I kept watching, and I remember that when she was on the show, it was kind of a big deal. Like, Jill Scott was going to be on Girlfriends. And I was just watching this, and I was like, but see, if it wasn't Jill Scott, like, if they hadn't specifically been like, we're getting Jill Scott and we're putting her on this show, that would not have gone down like that, at least if they're if they're keeping up with continuity, because William wasn't trying to fuck with fat women. Or like, not at all. And all of the women on the show were so skinny. And so I was thinking about that. But another thing that I was thinking about, like in regards to like even Friends, which I sort of casually grew up on and started watching a couple of years ago and got through some of it. And also Girlfriends, because I took them very differently at different times, is how comedies talked about queerness and being gay. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting for me because a lot of this has to do with my family, my context. I didn't grow up around, the only Black people that I was around when I was growing up were like church folk. So, you know, in Ohio, that's like what there was. I didn't even get exposed to sort of any other way of operating as a Black person in America until I went to college. And I didn't even realize that until I got to college and everyone wasn't trying to shove Jesus down my throat. And I remember that watching Girlfriends, which started airing when I was a freshman in high school, you know, there was constantly, almost in every episode, there was some kind of joke about homosexuality, even though it was, and sometimes transness, actually. And they actually did have just, like, a cameo with, like, a trans character really quickly once or twice. But I remember that at the time, we were so starved for media representation, and I was so starved for any kind of intersection between queerness and blackness, that I only took that to be affirming. That visibility, even as the punchline, as always the punchline in all these different moments, for me, told me, oh, here's a context of black people where I can actually be gay and be queer, and it's fine, because that's all we had in terms of representing queer black people on TV. And like, the role that it had for me was really, really affirming. And it was part of me envisioning a life for myself beyond what I was growing up within and where I was. And yet I can look back on it with a 2022 lens and be like, that's horribly problematic. That's so homophobic. Why it gotta be a problem? Why does the hippie character who's so free loving and actually has had sex with women and his name is having had sex with women, making comments like, oh, you need to watch out for your son in this moment. Like there's so many different things there. But for me, at that time and in the context that I was in, all it did was make me feel affirmed and make me feel like there was a context and a place within this country where I could be visible. And I've been thinking a lot about that really intensely as I look back on that show and other shows as well.
excuse me. I remember watching a Scary Movie recently, just because I heard Anna Faris like on a podcast or something like that, and I was like, oh yeah, I remember, because that was her first big role. That movie is so fucked up. Like, excuse me. Woo. It is so, like, there is a character named Mr. Man, or no, Mrs. Man. She's the PE teacher. And it's a Republican fever dream. It's like every single Republican talking point in 2022 about anti-trans shit is like just in that movie, where like it's really a man who's pretending to be a woman so that she can, so that he can get in the locker room and like see girls naked. And it's like so fucked up. And like the two of the killers, their whole motivation for being killers is that they're gay. But the thing is, like, there is still some, like, the bottom line for the punchline has obviously changed. And I think about like the sort of Paula Pell, Tina Fey sort of comedy where when it gets into its problematic regions, it's like the punchline is like, that person has an accent. Isn't their accent funny? You know? But I'm curious if there are any jokes you remember from early comedy specials, early television shows, or something that has kind of stuck with you. And I'll tell you mine. It was from Queens of Comedy. And Monique had this joke where she was like, because I think this saved the joke and it saved it from being homophobic, where she was like, I'm sorry if there are any homosexuals in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm sorry, because anal sex is some painful, horrible shit, but I like it now. And then she just goes on her whole anal sex journey and how she gets her partner into anal sex too. And like, it's just, I was like, it was so good. The turn of that joke was so good that I was like, this is, because it's like, it sets you up for an expectation of homophobia. And then it's like, no, I get it. Getting it up the butt is nice.
Yeah. I think mine is actually not from a comedy special, but I have this distinct memory. I just find it hilarious. It's actually from the Simpsons teams of, you know, everyone makes fun of Milhouse, and I feel like I identified with Milhouse for this reason. And Milhouse wears like 3/4 length pants. And like, it's an episode where like everyone's making fun of him for his like 3/4 length pants. And at the very end of the episode, the house floods and everyone gets their shoes and socks and pants wet. But Milhouse doesn't get his pants wet because he's wearing 3/4 length pants. And he just goes, everything's coming up, Milhouse. And I was like, yes, Milhouse. The entire episode, your entire outfit is like a setup for this moment where the thing that you get made fun of for is really your special power.
I remember also Milhouse. So me and my friend Lauren have this running joke because her screen name on Instagram is Thrilkinson, because when Milhouse bought a video game, he input his name as Thrillhouse, but it cut off, so it was just Thrillho.
Yes.
Because he couldn't fit that many letters on it. And that's also, Everything's Coming at Milhouse, that character sticks out so clear to me as like, yeah, I can see why you would identify with that character.
100%.
I get it. I see it. I am Milhouse.
Honestly, the way your hair looks right now in the Zoom, ho, the shape of your head, I don't know. I see it too.
I could fully be a Simpsons character right now with how I look. Everything really is a disaster.
It looks great.
What about you two? Are there any punchlines or jokes that stick out in your mind from pop culture or?
Yes. There's so many, but I think one, you know, those ones that like those lines in movies that you just like scream along anytime you see the movie, even though you've seen it like 2000 times, it's kind of unhealthy. So like White Chicks, listen,
yeah, my God.
That movie is so problematic, but I just love it so much. Ever since I first saw it, I've loved it so much. And I just love the part at the end where Terry Crews is like on the ground and there's the big reveal that they're like not who they say they are. And the girl, or like one of the Wayans, as the girl is like, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not this person. And he's like, you mean to tell me you're not a white woman? And just like the reaction of that, all the shit has gone down. And he was just so shocked, even though they looked nothing like white women at all. It was just so ridiculous and always just stands out to me. I also love, and I don't, this isn't a punchline, and I don't even know if this was like laugh out loud funny, but Daria was really funny to me when I was younger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just loved how she used to do that hand during the opening. Like things would be thrown at her and she just didn't try at all and just extended the hand slowly after. And I just like loved that energy and it always made me chuckle.
Yeah, I mean, Daria is a queen of disaffection. I love it so much.
I just love that vibe. Love it.
Daria still inspires me to this day, and I'm very excited for the series that Tracee Ellis Ross is doing as Jody. I think having graduated college when that comes out eventually. So for me, and go with me here, so there's this moment in The Nanny, which is a show that I also deeply love.
Oh my God, The Nanny was so good in the fashion. Wow.
The Nanny, it's funny because, right now, two-piece sets, like a crop top and a skirt or shorts or whatever, that are matching, that's very in right now. And that's a trend that I don't think has been in for a long time. And I was prepared for it because I rewatched The Nanny in January and I was like, I need to get some sets. And then 3 months later, I started seeing them appear everywhere in fast fashion. And I was like, oh, this is a thing right now. Not maybe because of The Nanny, but for me it was. But anyway, there's this episode of The Nanny where Fran is obsessed with just gossip and being nosy. And Mr. Sheffield comes home with some Broadway celebrity who's just had plastic surgery. And they're completely covered up. And the whole episode, Fran and Niles are trying to figure out who this person is. And eventually, they figure out that it's Cher, that Cher is staying in their house, recovering from having had plastic surgery. And so at the end of the episode, I think she's accidentally spilled the secret to the press, and the press is surrounding the house and they're trying to get Cher out of the house. And she has joked in this episode and previous episodes that her uncle Ira is a female impersonator slash maybe trans woman, and does the best Cher, like this side of Queens or whatever. And so the end of the episode is them having invited the press into the house. They're standing at the bottom of the staircase. They start playing a classic Cher song and they walk out. And the whole goal is that they're going to try to sneak Cher out. And Fran's like, it's going to work. She looks just like Cher. Like, it's brilliant. And of course, she comes out and she looks nothing. She's impersonating Cher, but she looks nothing like Cher. No one in their right mind would be convinced that this is Cher. But this was so, this humor, and there were many other moments throughout the series where she sort of referred to queer people and trans people that again made me be like, yes, we're a punchline and we're providing humor to a mainstream audience, but we're also visible. And that was really exciting for me. But in general, in that show, the relationship between Niles and Cece, who of course, in my opinion, are both clearly coded as gay, is iconic, like all of their comebacks and roasting of each other. Like I dream of having someone in my life that I can treat that way.
That was the gayest butler in the history of television.
Yeah. And most butlers on TV are gay. Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, true. There's no way. I don't know why they didn't just, they probably couldn't have a gay character on a mainstream sitcom like that during primetime at that time. But to me, it seems clearly that he was coded gay. I always actually thought William on Girlfriends was coded as gay.
Me too. And there were a lot of jokes. There were a lot of jokes,
but they couldn't do it. And mm-hmm. Gilmore Girls, which isn't a comedy, initially the character of Sookie St. James, played by Melissa McCarthy, was supposed to be a lesbian. But the WB wouldn't let them make her a lesbian. So they made her straight, and they made Michelle, the black French guy that worked with Lauren Graham's character at the inn. They coded him as gay, but they made him straight. And then in the reboot, he was out and married. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. Are there, just as an outro, because we got to keep moving, but are there any, like Ken said, are there any comedy specials or comedians who are doing the thing right now that you want to give a little shine to that our audience could engage with? Contemporary comedians. I'll go. I love Miss Pat. I saw Miss Pat at the Netflix as a Joke Festival. The Miss Pat show is, I think, a good example of using humor to actually get people to talk about complicated things. I think at its best, this is kind of what I try to do with poetry, which is like get in there with a dick joke and then be like, genocide, anybody?
Oh my God. Anybody
genocide? Because I think people, I believe, and this might just be me being a stupid optimist, but I do believe people can change, but they hate being told what to do. And yep. I think humor is a way of, because sometimes some people wouldn't show up for the documentary, but they absolutely would show up for the comedy. And I think that's just a wonderful tool that humor can have.
Same.
I mean, so there's a few people that I truly am standing right now who are all primarily stand-ups at the moment. I really love Naomi Ekperigin. I think she's just brilliant and incredibly funny, and she has a recent episode in the most recent season of The Stand-Ups on Netflix. So funny. I really love Mateo Lane, who I think is also incredibly funny and incredibly hot if you are not following him on Instagram. And I really love Patty Harrison. I really love her stand-up.
Me too.
She doesn't have a huge special somewhere, I don't think, unless I've missed it. But yeah, I just will Google clips of her on YouTube and watch them on end sometimes when I need a good laugh. I just think she's a freaking genius.
I definitely love Sam Jay, who's a writer for SNL, but also a stand-up mm-hmm. comedian. And I discovered her work when we did a gig together. And it was like a gig that I was asked to do. And I didn't realize it was going to be me and a bunch of stand-up comedians, which is truly my own personal idea of hell. Mm-hmm. But she was just like, number one, so funny, so smart. And we were like, we just hung out with all the people backstage drinking whiskey until like 2 a.m. And the show ended at like 10. And I would just like, everything she does since then, I'm just like, I consume it. I will eat it up with a spoon. It's so good.
All right, check some of those out, hot thotties. I'm feeling full, but like I could fit one more thing inside of me. Den knows how I feel. So to put the cherry on our top this week, Kenya, why don't you tell us what we're excited about now?
Hey thotties, what's good? It's your girl Kenya here. So obviously this sounds a little different. I, as you heard, was in the episode. Tried to do a dessert and that shit just wasn't funny. And the episode is about comedy. So here we are doing another dessert. I think what is funny is going extinct. And that's currently what's happening with our world and the human race. And so to cope with that, Alex and I have been spending a lot of time thinking about when the world was beautiful before, as in like before the dinosaurs went extinct. So a very, very long time ago. And we've been getting into Prehistoric Planet.
Shout out Prehistoric Planet. This is producer Alex. Shout out David Attenborough.
Love you.
Prehistoric Planet is the absolutely perfect thing to watch because it's pure escapism. Yeah. It literally, I think David Attenborough said, there's nothing else we can explore here in the current world. So let's just go back to when the dinosaurs were here and humans weren't there yet. Mm-hmm. So it's literally, there's some kind of new scientific technology where they have done CGI to all of the dinosaurs. And the images and the cinematography are incredible because there's also scenery of Earth before humans arrived on the planet. So it's completely untouched. Oceans, just beautiful land masses, desert. It's gorgeous. And I highly recommend watching it.
Highly recommend it. And it's also super interesting because I feel like with some digital reimaginations of things, since you know what they look like, you're like, oh, that's fake. Mm-hmm. But first of all, the CGI here is fucking amazing. Just like looking at the screen, like they have done so well crafting these images. And also, we ain't never seen this shit before. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, if they say that was a monopterodactylosaurus, mm-hmm. then listen, it was. Mm-hmm. And so that's what it is in my mind. And I've been really enjoying it.
Also, I want to give a shout out to the extra delectable content that they have created on Prehistoric Planet, because there are these really cool little 5-minute videos that show the science behind all of the images and kind of how they came up with, this is how the dinosaur looks, this is how the whale in prehistoric times looks. And David Attenborough is in there just kind of, you know, explaining the science and all of that. So we love an extra delectable bite. Highly recommended to watch that after the episode. What else, Ken?
David, we love you. I love what you're doing for the planet, what you tried to do. Mm. I respect that you're still in the game. Mm-hmm. And I think things are wild right now. You know, I mean, like, comic relief is one thing, but it is another thing to explore the world that we literally cannot explore today, mm-hmm. Through David's eyes, which I love.
So go watch Prehistoric Planet. Let us know what you think.
Check it out.
Mwah.
This episode of Food for Thought is made possible by the generous, unequivocal support of Rosé and our home at Stitcher. Our producer is the gorgeous Garganelli Alexandra De Palma. Subscribe, rate, and review us 5 stars on iTunes, or Joe stops using Facebook.
No.
Never. Never.
You can find me at Hey Teebs, HeyTeebs on Instagram, because I deleted Twitter.
You can find me and pre-order my book, Virology, out very soon at www.virology.com.
I'm Den Michelle. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Den Michelle. And you can follow my editorial pursuits at Electric Literature. And stay tuned, because we will have some really exciting things coming up there.
I'm Kenya Denise. You can follow me on IG at Kenya Diggit, KENYA_DIGGIT. Or you can follow Domino Sound and follow Domino Sound at Domino Sound CO. And that's on Instagram.
Find us on Instagram as Gay Sluts Who Read, and Facebook and Twitter at Food for Thought Pod. And finally, send your questions, thoughts, concerns, and dick pics. To thoughts at foodforthoughtpodcast.com. As always, that's food, the number 4, and thought spelled how?
T-H-O-T. Everything's coming up Milhouse.
Oh, God.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.